This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly this program is important for all people who are concerned about the dangers of Jewish supremacism. And that's correct. I said Jewish supremacism. You hear a lot about white supremacism these days. You hear a lot about, quote, white extremism. You hear very little about Jewish extremism and Jewish supremacism and the fact that many of the Jewish leaders of our media and our government today are loyal to Israel over that of the United States of America. Today I want to discuss the Zacharias Moussaoui case, the man who's charged with plotting the September 11 attacks in the United States of America. He's facing the death penalty, even though he had no participation in those attacks. But he's being sentenced to death for simply knowing about the attacks in advance and not warning the American people. That's why he's facing the death penalty. And in this broadcast, I will talk about the fact that the evidence is overwhelming that Israel knew in advance about the attacks of 9/11. That may sound outrageous to many of you listening, but that's simply the plain facts, and I can prove that to you, and I believe in this broadcast I'll offer some of that evidence for you. Another issue, again, I'm going to talk about is the issue of the American ports being let to a Arab firm from Dubai. As a patriotic American, as a person who's concerned about American security, American well-being, American business, the fact that we should control our own industry and business in this country, to have foreigners control key areas of our commerce and industry, is insane, not only from a standpoint of security, but it's also insane from a standpoint of the security of our economy. Because when foreigners can affect that economy in all sorts of ways, that is a weapon. That is a weapon they can use. Interestingly enough, of course, there are a number of Jewish supremacists and pro-Israeli backers who are also opposed to this deal. That's simply because they don't want any Arab influence whatsoever in the United States of America. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, they have all the influence. But for entirely different reasons, obviously, I oppose this port deal. There has been a real revolt in the Republican Party. Of course, I've been a Republican revolutionary for quite a long time. As you all know, I had the banners. I carried the banners of the Republican Party for the United States Senate in that race against J. Bennett Johnston, at which I came very close to winning. And I carried the banners of the Republican Party in the struggle for the governorship of Louisiana. At that point, the Republican Party leadership came out against me. They did everything they could to defeat me. Of course, in the process, they hurt the Republican Party. And in the process, they really hurt the so-called objectives that they say that they believe in and they support. All right, let's talk about Mr. Zacharias Moussaoui for a moment. Again, you probably know this already. This man was basically kind of a radical. Apparently, Al-Qaeda recruited him, and he turned out to be a loose cannon, and they got rid of him, basically. They wouldn't have anything to do with him. And they didn't tell him about any of their later plans. He knew, basically, the general outline of the plans. In fact, was given about $10,000 by them, if not more, to pay for training in jet and airliner simulators. And by his loose mouth and his crazy ways, he was the people who did the training tipped off the FBI, and he was later arrested. And apparently, he, according to the authorities today, he didn't know the details, the exact details of 9/11. He certainly did not participate in any way in the attacks. But because he did not inform the American people, he's now probably going to face the death penalty. At least the federal government is seeking the death penalty. I think this is very interesting for two reasons, and I'm going to link these two issues, both the ports and American security, which are in question, and I'm going to link the issue of American security in terms of 9/11 and what the Israelis knew and they didn't know. First off, ladies and gentlemen, the evidence is quite strong that the Israelis knew about 9/11. Let me offer some of that evidence for you right now in advance. This is not some wild and wacky conspiracy theory. It is a theory that certainly can't be necessarily proven, but I can offer a great deal of evidence to justify it and to show that it's more than likely the case. The evidence, is quite convincing once someone starts looking at the evidence. First, let's talk about 9/11 itself, the day of 9/11. At this time, during this period of time, in the United States of America, there was a huge Israeli spy ring. That's right, an Israeli spy ring. And they weren't spying necessarily on Arabs, but they were spying on some Arab groups like Al-Qaeda. They were literally spying on the American system. They were trying to infiltrate U.S. attorney's offices, Air Force and Army generals and officers complexes, even federal judges, members of the State Department. It's called the Israeli art students spy ring, because they were posing as Israeli art students. But the people that the government arrested, and what happened was, they were going to so many U.S. attorney's offices and government offices that someone began to notice a pattern here. And this is exactly how you try to develop and harvest contacts. This is how spies work. You meet someone. You find a target, and you meet them in a bar or a restaurant or whatever, accidentally or on purpose. You begin a conversation with them. You're from another country. You become friends. You become associates. Meanwhile, you have the data on them through tapped telephone lines, through other information that you might gather about them. And you find those agents in the American government, whether it be in intelligence, such as the FBI or CIA, or in the courts, or any part of the American system. And you find those who are vulnerable, those who, say, have a great gambling habit, or they have a secret homosexual proclivity, which they would simply die if it was found out by the world, found out by their wife, or a number of girlfriends that they can't afford to have their wife. There's a lot of people that would more fear scandal than almost anything else in their lives, even poverty. Scandal would be worse. Their reputation is everything. So these agents tried to discover where there's some sort of financial wrongdoing or some sort of moral wrongdoing on the part of these individuals. And once they find that information, they find their weak spots. And then at that point, they can blackmail them. If the person needs money or is seeking in desperate shape for money, they can offer money to them. Because they're friends, they can also play the card, "I'm your friend, and this is for Israel, an ally," this kind of thing. And they can develop their spies and agents in the United States of America. When they rounded up this Israeli art student ring, they discovered that most of them had very extensive Mossad and Israeli military and espionage experience. These were spies. These were spies. And then the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and these kind of things interlap in terms of government. They interwrap each other. And the DEA, as they learned about this the spy ring, by the way, they were part of the target of the infiltration, along with the FBI, along with the CIA, along with courts, judges, and prosecutors. It was really an amazing spy ring. When they discovered this ring, they started investigating. In fact, they found in a DEA report, in a DEA report, it revealed that the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence, had 5 Israeli agents living on the same street as Mohammed Atta. That's Mohammed Atta, of course, was the leader of the hijackers. Mohammed Atta. That's exactly what occurred. It was early in 2002, long after 9/11, that the French newspaper Le Monde printed a copy of the Drug Enforcement Administration memorandum that gave specifics of this massive Jewish spy operation in America. And among some of the things revealed were the names and addresses of the Mossad agents who were spying on the hijackers in the days before 9/11. And again, I said five lived in the same street. About half of the hijackers were being closely monitored by the Israeli Mossad. So there's a good question. If they're monitoring all these hijackers, the Al-Qaeda, and I'm going to talk about in a minute how that the Jewish Mossad and the Jewish government of Israel was very deeply involved in American phone systems. That's right, American phone systems. In fact, an Israeli company, believe it or not, has been in charge of most of the phone switching operations in the United States for quite a while, a company that's received money, a lot of money, in fact, from the Israeli government and from the Mossad. And also, this same company was involved, and is involved even today, with doing the contract work of tapping phones of individuals the government is going against, to say it be in criminal cases, and in some cases even spy cases. We have a foreign company doing the phone tapping. Isn't that valuable to a foreign intelligence agency to have that kind of data? And in fact, the program, which is called the Brit Hume program, on Fox News, did a very good expose on this. In fact, they did it over a series of a number of days. December 12th, actually, is when they broke it, and that's the same year as 9/11. They broke the knowledge of this report. Now, let me quote from Brit Hume in this broadcast. From the host. He said, quote, "It's been more than 16 years since a civilian working for the Navy was charged with passing secrets to Israel. Jonathan Pollard pled guilty to conspiracy to commit espionage and is serving a life sentence. At first, Israeli leaders claimed Pollard was part of a rogue operation, but later took responsibility for his work. Now, Fox News has learned, some U.S. investigators believe that there are Israelis, again, very much engaged in spying in and on the United States. Israelis who may have known things they didn't tell us before September 11. Now, this is, again, Brit Hume, and now it's going to go to Carl Cameron, who was the correspondent. This is Carl Cameron, Fox News Network, not some radical, wild-eyed individual, as I am quite branded occasionally. Carl Cameron, Fox News correspondent, says, quote, "Since September 11, more than 60 Israelis have been arrested or detained, either under the new Patriot Anti-Terrorism Law or the Immigration Violations Statutes. A handful of active Israeli military were among those detained, according to investigators, who say some of the detainees also filled polygraph questions when asked about alleged surveillance activities against and in the United States. There is no indication that the Israelis were involved in the 9/11 attacks, but investigators suspect that they, the Israelis, may have had gathered intelligence about the attacks in advance and not shared it." Hume goes on to say, "Carl, what about this question of advanced knowledge of what was going to happen on 9/11? How clear are investigators that some Israeli agents may have known something?" And this is Carl Cameron responding, quote, "It's a very explosive situation, obviously, and there's a great deal of evidence that they say they have collected, none of it necessarily conclusive. It's more when they put it all together. A bigger question, they say, is how could they, of course, that the Israelis, not have known." And in fact, Cameron goes on to say those words are, quote, almost a direct quote. So here we have it, ladies and gentlemen, and it's just an amazing thing. How could the Israelis not have known? You know, one of the interesting facts, you know, surrounding 9/11 is the fact that one day before the report, before the attack, the World Trade Center attack, the Washington Times ran a story about a recent 68-page study issued by the U.S. Army School for Advanced Military Studies. That's called SAMS for short. The study issued by the Elite Army Officer School detailed the dangers of a possible U.S. Army occupational force in the Middle East. And here's how the article commented about the Israeli Mossad, and I quote, of the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence service, the SAMS officers say, quote, wild card, ruthless and cunning, has capability to target U.S. forces and make it look like a Palestinian-Arab act. And of course, ironically, within 24 hours of the story's publication, the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were in flames. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll discuss a couple of the other facts about how I think the Israelis knew and some of the evidence that is involved in it. You know, the Washington Post's news service called News Bites ran a story, and this has since been confirmed, that, quote, and this is how the story was headlined, instant messages to Israel warned of WTC attack. Officials at an instant message firm, Odigo, confirmed today that two employees received text messages warning of an attack on the World Trade Center 2 hours before terrorists crashed planes into the New York landmarks. But Alex Dimitis, Vice President of Sales and Marketing, confirmed that workers in Odigo's Research and Development International Sales Office in Israel received a warning from another Odigo user apparently 2 hours prior to the first attack. Well, ladies and gentlemen, who do you think would be warning this Israeli firm with offices in the Trade Center that there was an impending attack on the New York Trade Center? Do you think the Osama bin Laden would have been doing that warning? Do you think these Arab terrorists would have been warning this Israeli firm? I think, obviously, that if there were warnings, that the Mossad would be behind that, and that would mean the Mossad would have knowledge. Another fascinating bit of information, and this is, you know, a great piece of information, I think, in terms of the evidence in this particular case, is that the FBI, on the morning of the attacks, while the attacks were going on, they arrested a number of Israelis who were filming the attacks from the top of a building in New Jersey. And that's right, they were cheering the attacks as they went. The videos show that. And they even were taking snapshots and where they were smiling and very happy Israelis flicking lighters. Now, these men were locked up by the FBI. They had obviously a cover firm, some sort of Israeli moving firm. It turned out they all had extensive backgrounds in Mossad. They were indeed Mossad agents. And it was admitted in the media that they failed their lie detector tests. When Mr. Shertoff, that same master of Hurricane Katrina, when he came into office as the head of the terrorism task force and the head of prosecution in the Justice Department for criminal prosecution. Interestingly enough, these Israeli agents who had failed tests and been locked up for months were allowed to return to Israel without even going before the 9/11 Commission. That's pretty strong evidence, isn't it? And why would they be laughing in the first moments of the attacks? Why would they be so happy about these attacks? My idea is that they knew something about these attacks in the advance. They expected these attacks. They knew who the perpetrators of these attacks were. They knew about it, and they were there to film it. And they celebrated it because it was like mission accomplished. And they knew that these attacks, in terms of motive, obviously, would be a tremendous advantage to Israel. And in fact, it really stopped the in its tracks, the development of the Palestinian state, and has led exactly to what we have right now in terms of Palestine. Now, a lot of people would say, could Israel commit such a terrible act against the United States? I mean, would they do such a horrible thing? Well, they've done it before, ladies and gentlemen. They've never been shy about doing it. As you know, in 1954, the Israeli government launched a secret operation of terrorism against the United States called Operation Susanna. And it plotted to murder Americans and blow up American installations in Egypt. And their plan was to leave false evidence to indicate that Egyptians committed terrorist attacks so as to make America go to war against Egypt on the side of Israel. They did succeed in blowing up some post offices and American libraries in Cairo and Alexandria, but on the way to blow up an American movie house, the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Theater. That's ironic, isn't it? One of the bombs blew up in the Israeli agent's pockets, and the whole plot unraveled because he sang like a bird to the Egyptian authorities, and the whole Israeli gang was rounded up. Now, not only this is a terrible, treacherous terrorist activity, in effect, that the plot would have continued, many Americans would have died, and this is acts of terrorism against the United States. We're the country that has made Israel possible. Without for the money and support of America and the UN and elsewhere, Israel wouldn't even exist today as a nation. This is how they pay us back. They try to commit terrorism against us, and then, in fact, they use this terrorism. And if the terrorism wasn't bad enough, they use the terrorism to try to get us into a war unjustly with a nation that was doing nothing against us, Egypt. And that war, in turn, would have cost certainly many thousands of American lives and countless billions of American dollars. I've talked about some other issues. There is a lot of evidence that Israel knew about 9/11 ahead of time and basically did not let us know because they wanted 9/11 to lessen the pressure against Israel and to advance the Israeli agenda. Now, people might say that that's, far-fetched, but the evidence is there. I've also pointed this out. And in fact, I just read, I continue to read, when my opposition tries to put me down and attack me and belittle me and ridicule me, they almost never say what I actually say. That's why they don't want you to read for yourselves what I write. They don't want you to read my books in the bookstores. They've done their best to try to stop distribution as much as they can in the major bookstores of America. Certainly, whether you agree with me or not, you have to admit that my ideas are interesting and newsworthy. It's the kind of stuff that sells books and sells magazine articles. But let me tell you, they wouldn't print an article of mine in any major news media, and they don't sell my books in any of the major bookstores. Oh, they'll order them through the book distributors. They can't avoid that because they pride themselves on making all books that are in print available, theoretically, but they don't promote them, and they basically do not review them. And these are the engines of book sales. But the way they deal with me is basically to distort what I say. And I just read a report the other day that talked about my commentary on 9/11. And I talked about how that the Israeli death toll was extraordinarily low at the World Trade Center. In fact, the latest evidence is that there were no Israelis that died in the conflict in the buildings, I should say, at the World Trade Center and the surrounding buildings. There were two Israelis that died on the hijacked planes. And the interesting thing is that if you think of the two Israelis that died out of 256 people, shouldn't there be a similar amount among the 2,400 people or so that died in the Trade Center? And because, the Trade Center is the center of world finance, world trade things, where Israelis are very overrepresented. Many Israelis practically commute between Israel and New York City. And the Israeli involvement with firms and organizations and businesses in the Trade Center, people who hold Israeli citizenship or dual citizenship with Israel, are just single citizenship in Israel, who work there, who go there, who do business there, is absolutely enormous. A good example is the co-owner of the Trade Center himself is not only a Australian citizen, but he's an Israeli citizen. So the co-owner of the Trade Center was in fact an Israeli citizen himself. And the first day after the attack, none other than the Jerusalem Post, one of the most prestigious, if not the most prestigious newspaper in Israel, ran a story that had a headline that said 4,000 Israelis were missing after the attack. And interestingly enough, that was revised down later to around 130. In fact, that's what George Bush said in his speech, and then that was revised down later to 1, and then later to 0. Now, some people say there was 1 Israeli. Now, I've only said Israelis. Obviously, it's one thing to warn Israeli citizens, and this doesn't mean that every Israeli citizen was warned who was at the Trade Center. But it suggests to me, with a death toll that low, that some had to have been warned, not to have a death toll that low. And also, again, there were two in the planes with 250 people, but somehow no Israelis. And those Israelis in the planes obviously would have been much more hard to warn ahead of time in terms of passenger manifest as compared to people in a building or a place of work, such as in the Trade Center. That's certainly a good question. How could the death toll have been so low at the Trade Center? The quotation from the Jerusalem Post was, "The foreign ministry in Jerusalem has so far received the names of 4,000 Israelis believed to have been in the areas of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon at the time of the attack." That's the headline and first sentence of the Jerusalem Post article. And then later, and here's the last, the New York Times, September 22nd, which is 11 days after the attacks. It said the Thursday night mentioned that about 130 Israelis had died in the attacks, but by Friday, Alan Pincus, Israel's consul general here, said that the list of the missing included reports from people who had called in because, for instance, their relatives were in New York at the Trade Center and not returning their phone calls. There were, in fact, only three Israelis who had been confirmed as dead, two on the planes and another who had been visiting the towers on business and who was identified and buried. And since that time, a number of sites say that there were no Israeli casualties. So how does that argument that I made, how is that distorted by my enemies and by the people who control the media? Well, very simply, they just distorted it by saying that I said that no Jews died in the attack. Well, of course Jews died in the attack. You can't have a major financial mortgage and stock and brokerage firms, international trade firms in New York without having some Jews there. And by the way, you can't have it as well without having some Israelis there. As I said, many go back and forth. A number of Jews died in the attacks. And I never said that Jews didn't die, but I said specifically that Israeli citizens, that either one or no Israeli citizens died in the attacks. Now I'm going to go back talking about that and about, here's this man, Zacharias Moussaoui, who is likely to be executed, and they're having a big court case trying to execute him because, not because he participated in the attacks in the Trade Center, but because he knew about it and didn't tell us. And indeed, anyone who would know about this kind of attacks and not tell the American people and not work to prevent them is committing a great crime against the United States of America. And is that not so when it's applied to the supporters of Israel, who very likely did not report this instance? A lot of people just don't want to believe. They don't want to accept the fact that those Zionists, those super Zionists and Jewish supremacists who support Israel are a real threat to the United States of America. This Iraq war was created by basically a neocon, which is a short term for Jewish supremacist, hijacking of the American government and our American foreign policy. Pearl and Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith, Wormser, Elliot Abrams, Crystal, all these men for years have been advocating this war, and they've done it because they were so much against Israel. The reason why Iraq went from an enemy of the United States of America, or became an enemy of the United States of America, and they used to be a friend, and they were a very good friend, and we supported them militarily even against Iran, was simply because Saddam Hussein became a big enemy of Israel and did not support the Israeli cause and supported very strongly the Palestinian cause. So at that point, Israel worked overtime to make Saddam Hussein an enemy of the United States of America. They used their power and influence in media, they used their power and influence in government, and they succeeded and they got us in a war. They couldn't get America to go to war by saying that, well, Saddam's an enemy of Israel, a danger to Israel, and it's Israel's strategic objective to overcome and destroy the power of Iraq. They couldn't do that. The only way they could do that was to say that Iraq was threatening the United States of America, that they might have nuclear weapons coming up, that they might have chemical weapons, and they were violating everything, just the whole ball of wax. And that's exactly what they did. They made up these lies. Stuart Cohen, the Jewish individual who was head of intelligence in the CIA on this whole Iraq problem, again, a very ardent Zionist. We can go further. I mean, the whole structure of these lies was created by these Zionists. And the media then cheerleaded this war, did not look at this evidence critically, and we go off to war. And now, of course, the result of it is we've got thousands of Americans dead, tens of thousands of Americans wounded, disfigured, crippled, blinded, emasculated. And these men and women simply were patriots to the American people. They were willing to go off and endure this very difficult service, and it's terrible service to go over there. It's not like this prior wars where you could go among the civilian population when you got off. Everybody's basically stuck on the bases. It's like they're little islands. It's almost like they're in jail. America's not winning this war. The idea that somehow America's winning it, the truth is we control about 1% of the area of Iraq. We control a little bit area around the bases and the green zone of Baghdad. The rest of the country, we can't even go out and explore it without huge amounts of munitions and body armor and armored vehicles and all the rest. We can't even, in fact, get from downtown Baghdad and the government buildings to the airport without a good chance of being hurt or attacked. Now let's go to the issue about the security of the United States in terms of ports. Obviously, America should pursue a policy that our business interests, that our Native American manufacturing, that all the aspects of the American economy should be controlled by Americans. And in terms of security, we don't need foreigners controlling our ports where things can be smuggled in, even if America provides a lot of security for those ports. Again, once you control a company like that, there's so many ways that you can bring in contraband and illegal matter into the United States of America. The threat is huge. And obviously there's a lot of anti-American feeling, not just in Baghdad or Iraq or Iran or parts of Saudi Arabia or parts of Lebanon, but all over the Middle East, including Dubai. There's a tremendous amount of anti-American feeling for our naked support of Israel, for the terrorist and violent and vicious state of Israel, its oppressive state of Israel. And are these people really secure? But the interesting thing is we've got this big brouhaha about it. I think this deal is going to be stopped because I think the Jewish supremacists, even though I think that they feel in some way there's no real problem to it, really, they're going to want it stopped, and I think this process will be stopped eventually. In fact, I've read today the GOP itself, the Republican Party, has moved to try to stop this this action on the part of the GOP. But ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you a question. We've got all this concern about them controlling our ports. Do we have any concern about Converse and these other Jewish organizations controlling the wiretapping in the United States, controlling our phone lines in the United States, a nation that spied on us with Jonathan Pollard, a nation that committed terrorist acts against us in the Levant affair and the attack on the Liberty? Then the evidence is overwhelming for these things. Absolutely, ladies and gentlemen, I think that we've got to be concerned about our main issue. And the fact that we can have these Israeli loyalists after what Israel has done to us. In fact, we had Bolton, who's our representative before the United Nations, a very vital representation of the United States to the world. And he went to the AIPAC convention. The AIPAC is an organization that had two of its leaders arrested, and they face trial right now for, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Espionage against the United States of America. To me, isn't that scandalous? How could any American diplomat, any American leader, go before an organization whose leadership and top personnel in the organization were and are being accused of spying against the United States of America? That should show you the power and the control that they have in this country. It's just amazing. And how can it be that the largest and most powerful lobby in the United States of America is a lobby, indeed, for a foreign country? So, let's stop the port deal. But let's also start to be concerned about sharing so much technology with Israel. Now, as far as the dangers to America or Europe in the long run, I want to quote one last quote before I get off the air this evening. It's been a little bit of a longer show than usual. And I've quoted this before. You can find this quote in Jewish Supremacism, and I hope that all of you who've not read my books yet will read Jewish Supremacism and read My Awakening and see some of these facts for yourself in black and white. And go check out the documentation that's in this book. One of the largest sites, if not the largest site in Israel, is a site called Gamla News and Views. And one of the major commentators of that site is a very popular commentator in Israel named Emmanuel Winston, Jewish, of course. And this site was so influential, in fact, it helped get Benjamin Netanyahu elected at one time to prime minister. And so it's had a tremendous impact on Israel. It's a popular site in Israel. And even an individual who's been the former head of Israel and who may well be the head again, and he's very radical, is every bit as radical, if not more so, than Ariel Sharon. And that's Benjamin Netanyahu. He has been closely associated with this site. Now, in this website, Winston wrote an article about called The Crack of the Whip. And it really reveals the true feelings of the Jewish supremacists, not about the Arabs, but against the European Americans. And I don't think anything better illustrates that it's not only the Palestinians that they seek to ethnically cleanse and wipe out, but European Americans as well. And it's one of the reasons why I think the Jewish power structure, the extremist Jewish power structure, has not done much to really curtail the immigration, even though it may be a degree of a threat to them in terms of Arab influence. Of course, they don't have the influence in the media, don't have the influence in money that the Jews do, but even that is something they feel uncomfortable with. Overall, though, they believe it's a powerful thing for them, and the fact that multiculturalism will weaken the influence and the control of the American people. Okay. Get something out of my throat there. Okay. Let me quote to you for a moment. This is from the Gamla website, and this really underlines the hate that is felt toward us. Quote, "As any prostitute can tell you, for a fee they'll agree to do anything you want. The Europeans are really a low, immoral people who would sell their mother and then deliver. How easily any sense of humanity, of civilization, slips away from their face, leaving only the beast." Now, this is a discussion of us, ladies and gentlemen, Europeans and Americans. "This beast has many faces and names. Sometimes they're called Germans, Poles, Croatians, Ukrainians. But other times they become the Church, the Red Cross, our Prime Ministers, Kings, Führer. Then in a quick change we see some Americans, French, English, and finally there is the contaminated Jew called the leftist. It doesn't really matter, this name or that. Underneath there is a strand, a bond that society teaches children to hate the other, the different ones. These are people of ultimate evil as the beast stays just below the surface, ready to savage, ready to kill the Jew." Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's this individual talking about calling us haters, and he's calling us a prostitute, and says to hate the different ones. Winston then goes on to blatantly cheer the genocide of European people. He says, quote, "The planet would be well rid of the European predator. Perhaps we will be fortunate to live in such interesting times, an old Chinese curse, to see the decline and disappearance of the graveyard called Europe. The Europeans, the English, and the American Arabists once again come together and crack the whip over the Jews." Now let me repeat, that's Gamla, the top website in Israel, supported by major Jewish political figures, such as Benjamin Netanyahu. Is that not extremism, ladies and gentlemen? Is that not Jewish supremacism? Is that not hatred? You know, and this article calls for nothing less than genocide. And I'm called a hater for exposing this kind of hate. Imagine if we turn it around, ladies and gentlemen. Imagine if I said, and we've got to be careful here because they might take this quotation and then and then print it or play it back and pretend that these are my sentiments. But I'm going to take these words that he wrote, I'm going to turn it around so you can see the real impact of what he said. Now imagine if I got up and said, quote, "The planet will be well rid of the Jewish predator. Perhaps we will be fortunate to live in such interesting times to see the decline and disappearance of the graveyard called Israel." Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there is a double standard. There's no question about it. And we need to be concerned in the United States about our security, our well-being, our true independence. And we definitely need to begin to examine the role of Jewish supremacists in the destruction of our country. Not only for our purposes and benefit, but for all people. You know, it's often said that Israel's our only friend in the Middle East. One congressman said when this was said years ago, very brave one, there's not many like that today. He said, well, before we supported Israel, we had no enemies in the Middle East. So we go from a situation where all the people in the Middle East were friends of America. They looked at America kindly because they were always concerned about European colonialism. And we've made dire enemies out of tens of millions of people, and enemies out of people that control vital resources, like such as oil and natural gas and other resources that are very vital to our people. They also control waterways, such as the Nile, such as the Nile River. They control, of course, the connection between the Mediterranean and the Persian Gulf, and indeed Asia. Before that Suez Canal was built, of course, the ships had to go all the way around the Horn of Africa. So the position and the importance to America is vital in terms of these Arabic countries and these Muslim countries, and we've purposely made them evil. We were not attacked, ladies and gentlemen, on 9/11 because these people hated our democracy. They didn't attack Sweden, a long-standing democracy, much older than the United States. They didn't attack Iceland, a long-standing democracy, much older than that of the United States. They did not attack Switzerland. They attacked us because of our policies. That's the reality of it. And we've got to start beginning to realize that this attachment, this connection with Israel, has been devastating to the American people. It's cost us trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in money. It's cost us great numbers of lives. Thousands of our soldiers right now, and sailors and other military personnel, and even civilians in Iraq. It's cost us, it's cost us the friendship of the world. It's going to cost us increased terrorism around the world against the United States of America and against Americans wherever they may be in the world. It has cost the blood of hundreds of thousands of other people in the world. You know, we went into Iraq and we can mouth nice platitudes about how we're fighting for democracy and we're fighting for these people's freedom. Well, tell that to the father who, you know, holds his limp, dead daughter's body. You know, tell that to the man who has to bury his wife or his mother, or a woman who's got to bury her son, our daughter, our father, our husband. Iraq is a disaster. And we can say that we're doing them a favor, but obviously that we're not doing them a favor. We're not doing our own troops a favor. We're not doing America a favor. We're not fighting terrorism, ladies and gentlemen. We're creating more terrorism and hatred against us every day that we remain in Iraq. And I don't think that any sort of democracy over there is worth a life of one good American. I say these things from a patriotic point of view. And I know that we wouldn't be in this war except for the Jewish supremacist power that so dominates our society. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been very good being with you, and I'll certainly be with you tomorrow. I hope that you'll get on your computer right now, spread our word, and also give us some support. I need your support to continue this work. We've got to pay a lot of expenses. Also, I urge you to support Stormfront and Don Black as well. They've been doing some great work there. And we've got to find people who are willing to do more than simply mouth criticism. It seems every day there are people of our ranks that complain about the way things are. They complain about what's going on in the world. But you know, you don't have any really strong right to complain about the way things are unless you're willing to do something about it, unless you're willing to stand up and defend your people and your heritage. I'm doing that every day, but I need your help to continue it. Thank you so much, and I'll see you tomorrow.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.